Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this week's edition of Verbal Shenanigans. We are very happy to be back, as always. I just want to tell you about some of the sponsors we have real quick on the show that have been with us through thick and thin and are just really awesome businesses that we love to support also. And one of them happens to be Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Now, if you've never been to Manskirt, it's located in the old bank building on Main Street in Hackettstown. It's a really cool location. A lot of really neat murals on the wall, 8 seasonally inspired ales. Go there, play some games, listen to some music, and best of all, grab an awesome craft pint. Now, they have the Blonde Bastard still on tap, which is an 8.5 summer monstrosity. So they got a bunch of events coming up. You got to go check out Manskirt. Go look at Joe Fisher in his Manskirt. Yes, that's correct. And just go there and have a good time. There's a couple other breweries in the area. You can make a nice craft beer trip out of it. That is Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Now, Wolf Nation, WULF, Wake Up Live Free Apparel, is an up-and-coming clothing company that is doing all sorts of great designer clothing for men, women, children, dogs, grandmas, whatever, athletes. And Richie over there has a bunch of new designs coming out, and they're taking pre-orders and trying to get the business off the ground. Again, that is Wolf Nation, WULF Nation. Wake up, live free. It's only a dream if you are not pursuing it. So go check out wolfnation.rocks and get your pre-order in. Wear some apparel of an up-and-coming entrepreneur. That is Wolf Nation. Trivia Revolution. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company based all over the state of New Jersey in craft beer bars and breweries. Every week we're all over the place playing trivia. It is free to play. You could win prizes to breweries. You could be in last place and still win prizes. He's doing a lot of cool things like craft beer bingo and doing things during football season during the game. So go check them out at Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Okay, today we got a really cool guest on the show. World-famous voice actor. He's been on the Smurfs and G.I. Joe, and he just worked with LeBron James. And if you look at his resume, it's pretty much every awesome cartoon he's been part of that we enjoyed in the 80s and 90s. He's done tons of movies. Just a really cool guy with tons of experience. The one and only Michael Bell joins this show and really gives us an insight into the art of voice acting. So, really fun episode. Check it out. Tune in, like, share, and review. Enjoy the podcast.
Hi, this is Michael Bell. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Have a good one.
Shenanigans are cruel and tragic, which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, okay, we're back. Oh, yay. Michael Berlew, what do you say? Oh, yeah.
Nothing much.
That was my new intro. I'm thinking it's going to become our thing, like a sign-off. We're going to have a sign-off.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I'm going to be like, all right, okay, Michael Berlew, what do you say? What do you think? Is it marketable?
I guess so. You know, get some people clapping in the back, you know, maybe a cameo by some singer. Could work, you know. It could be are you ready for some football?
I mean, we've interviewed a couple singers. Maybe we can, like, get a super band to do it. Like, we could have Chris Ballou from the President of the United States of America. He could play guitar and sing. And then G-Love can accompany him. You know, G-Love.
Obviously, Victor Wooten on the
bass. Yeah,
on the bass, obviously.
And then Josh Eppard from Coheed on the drums.
Okay.
But then we have Riley Breckenridge from Thrice, so they might have to have a drum off. And we also have Travis from Coheed, so he might want to play with his bandmate, mm-hmm. Josh. So I don't know.
We could get Kim Boyko in for some sweet background music, you know.
We could. Yeah. But anyway,
then they'll all ask why are us two being there, you know?
Well, I'm sure all those guys would lay down sweet tracks for us. And
yeah.
Because we're
we'll just give him a t-shirt.
We're pretty much like best of friends at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when me, you, and like Victor Wooten went to Great Adventure? We were on the log flume. It was amazing.
Yeah. Remember how he said this was so much better than Iowa? I mean, and it was so true.
And then remember when you and Chris Ballou did the parasailing together? That was awesome.
Ah, that was a crazy weekend. And then me and him got lost. We got shipwrecked. You know.
See, I was pissed because you got to go up with Chris Ballou from the President of the United States, and I had to go up with the mustache champ. Me and him had to sit up in the.
He had trouble getting in the air because of that mustache. It was weird. I was dragging him down, and you were getting really angry with him.
Yeah. And then there was that other time that you went with Gift of Gab, and you guys went to that freestyle contest in California.
Yeah, I do not know how I got the bronze medal. It was like a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I've been trying to duplicate the effort, but it comes off really weird and terrible for some reason.
And then you realized it was the Special Olympics rap mm-hmm. battle, and then that bronze felt a lot better, like you earned it.
Yeah, it fit more well, you know. In my heart, it's like, this makes sense.
It fit more well?
Yeah, it completed my world, if you will.
Oh, well, I'm good. And then, I guess... Yeah, I can't really think of. Oh, and then Snow. That time you went with Snow.
Yeah. We went in the desert for some reason. We thought it was funny because it was like the opposite of snow. But it was really, it wasn't that special, to be honest. We were just looking at each other. It's like, all right, this was a stupid idea. And then we went to Vegas together.
It was kind of like that time that I went to Vegas with Andrew W.K., and yeah. I thought it was going to be this ridiculous party, and we just ended up going clothes shopping.
Yeah, I mean, the guy needed slacks and all. It's like, why are you doing it this weekend, bro?
Yeah, it wasn't like this party hard kind of attitude, you know. He just took me for suspender shopping.
Yeah. Remember that time you and I took on Lenny Dykstra and Dave Anderchuk and Partners Ping Pong?
Yeah, we killed them. But, I mean, Lenny was ODing, but that doesn't take away from our win.
Yeah, Dave kept on screaming, "Where's the ice?" We're like, shut up and play. I mean, come on, man.
He needed ice for Lenny Dykstra's bruised face because he hit the table when he passed out.
Yeah, he went unconscious really early into the event and all. I really don't think that was his diabetes medicine they was putting in his system. I got to be honest.
No, and I don't really think that was his girlfriend either that was with him.
No. I thought it was really weird. He asked us to wear the tinfoil hat to make sure nobody knows where we were at.
Well, anyway, guys, welcome. Sorry, we just went off on a shameless self-promotion bit. But anyway, those were all former guests of the show, if you know any of them. But welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans, a weekly show where we just kind of... I don't know. We analyze life a little bit, and then we talk to interesting guests. I guess that's how you can sum it up. And I'm Scott here, and that is Mike down there in the sweet state of Georgia as he's sucking down a peach and waving his Confederate flag. And
Scott, you know I don't like peaches.
Anyway, Mike, what is up? How are you?
I'm doing well, my friend. We are getting into less than a month territory for the wedding, so... It's getting interesting. The girl is starting her first level of panicking. So,
since you guys are doing like a non-traditional backyard kind of thing, what kind of things are you trying to get together? Like, what kind of things are you trying to plan on?
Well, we sent out invitations. We send e-invitations just to get the number. We're going to be... bring some chairs and stuff. We got a backyard speaker, Bluetooth, to play some music. We have one of her...
I think you should just play episodes of the podcast for Paul.
Yeah, I do. But this is my best joke right here.
Listen, Scott couldn't make it because of work, but he's here. His voice is here. Let's just play it really loud.
Yeah. I don't know why we picked this episode with the sleep deprivation guy. I really don't think this is that romantic, but still.
Wait, Remember when we had him on and we tried to interview him about this awesome like record he set of being deprived of sleep, and all he wanted to do was talk about his diet?
Yeah, he kind of sent me an email. He's like, I was a little surprised you didn't talk more about my herbs and stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm not sure I want to really promote herbs that keep you up for 8 days, to be honest. I have to suspect that's something illegal. I got to be honest with you. I can't imagine the state saying, yeah, we're cool with you doing this.
Listen, and those of you who are listening, we mostly have. I have to say, and this is not BSing, I have to say I enjoy like 90% of our guests I find very interesting. Besides Dom Bagnato.
That was bottom of the barrel.
Dom actually texted me. He was listening to our show, and he said, I was two episodes behind, catching up now. The Texas Armadillos team that Berlew was thinking of is actually the team from the movie Necessary Roughness.
Oh!
So a little,
good call.
Little interaction.
I knew there was something with armadillos out there in Texas.
So... I don't know if that makes Dom the big nerd that like got it, or you the big nerd that just thought they were a real team. So maybe it's like a team thing. Maybe you guys are equal. But thank you, Dom, for being our loyal one of our loyal listener.
Do you think he actually knew that, or was he like Googling for hours trying to get the answer?
Well, I know he was like in between jobs, so there's a good chance he was Googling for hours. Anyway.
Well, I'm done researching verbal shenanigans. Now it's time to All in Our Heads podcast.
All right, so back to your wedding.
Yeah. So we got to do some rental of chairs and tables. Her best friend, her maid of honor, she's actually going to cater for us. She's going to drive down the 14 hours with a bunch of food in her back, and she's also going to give us a list of stuff to make, and also her gift to us will be catering for that.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to clean around the house. I mean, house has been good. We've been keeping it up. We've been good house owners. It's just going to be minor stuff like how to weed whack some of the stuff in the back just to clean that out. And I'll kind of get into a story about what I found in the backyard if you saw my Facebook status yesterday.
Real quick, I met a guy the other day. So we're still relatively new in the community, so we're still meeting new people. Young guy, he actually bought Rich McDonald, the fellow comic's house that lived around the corner from, remember, he used to live around the corner from me, Rich, with his wife, Danny. But he said that he didn't buy a lawnmower. He bought one of the push lawnmowers. And then, which is okay. I get it if you have a small lawn, whatever. But then I was like, well, did you buy a weed whacker? You need one? Because I think we actually have like two. So I was asking him like if he needed one to borrow one. And he said that he bought one of those, like, what is that called? Like a scythe? Is that what
it's scythe. Like? Oh. Yeah. I was like what death carries.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, dude. Like, what are you waiting to have your, like, seven sons take care of your lawn? Like what? Who uses that for their lawn? I have
that
never.
That must be a bitch when he gets near the mailbox and all. God damn it, another one.
I have never seen a person in the state of New Jersey use that. I could see, like, if you have I have never seen someone in my lifetime actually use one of those besides for like Halloween props. Have you?
I've never heard of like an actual use in this country of it. You know, maybe like wheat fields in Bulgaria I might have seen something like that, but not for, hey, I have to trim the lawn.
Yeah. So I was like, dude, I mean, I get it. Trying to save money is all cool, but dude, a weed whacker is not that expensive. Nah, like you can get
one mine for $20 in a yard sale. Come on now.
Oh, dude, you're getting taken over by the yard sales.
Well, that was well before. It wasn't recent ones and all, but I do. We do a weekly yard sale. You know, we go out and find. Oh yeah, every Saturday morning we go out and try to see. Just build different stuff in the house. So
have you Do you feel that going to these yard sales, you're just like you're buying things just to buy?
Not me. I go in there for need. She goes in there sometimes for decoration. It works out well, and it's not like we're throwing $50 here or whatever. No, I mean, the key is just you look at the price, and you always see they'll go lower, and that's how you fill your house on the cheap. Mm. And it's quality stuff, and all it's stuff where people are moving away, and they just don't want to bring the stuff. They're not going to get a big U-Haul, so it's like, I can't bring this, I can't bring that, and they're desperate to get rid of stuff. So you go 50% under, you're like, all right, whatever, gets it off my lawn.
Side note, I looked up scythe on Google just to like get an image to make sure I was talking about the right thing. And like the seventh image that popped up was a chihuahua with cheeseburgers on his feet.
That's what I imagined when you talked about scythe.
Oh yeah,
chewing on the lawn. He's like, I don't understand why he doesn't eat the burgers, but okay.
That was a weird image. Like, I was taken aback a little bit, but okay. All right, so let's shift back. You got to weed whack the lawn. All right, what anything else you got to take care of?
Clean out the garage if it rains, because that's where we'll get married if it gets rained. Then, I had to figure out what we're going to do with the dog and the cat at that time, because they just like to get into things, so we'll have to figure that out. But, I got my days off, and we're just kind of easing into it. No, it's not we're probably going to estimate around 25 people or so, so I'm not sitting back going, oh, my God, all these people, what the hell am I going to do? So,
right. All right, so real quick before we – it's just about guest time. Your weed whacker story.
Well, it's not a weed whacker story. It's a backyard story.
Okay,
so,
that's what I meant.
Yeah, so I let Callie outside yesterday, and she's been exploring a little bit, so I don't mind too much. I'm trying to teach her to walk around without a leash on, so I can just bring her in, make life easier, whatever.
No, there's no fence. It's open.
There's side fences here and there, but I mean, pretty much, if she wanted to sprint out, she could sprint away from the house,
right?
Well, so she's going way in the back. The previous owners had like a homemade backyard patio built, which is really nice, and we have like lawn furniture or whatever, and she goes past it, and then there's like another tier. She goes up and she's going into kind of like the wooded area, and I'm like, all right, she's just sniffing around trying to take a dump or whatever. So she goes going to this big patch, and I can kind of see her going in and coming up, and I can see her doing with the chewing motion. And I'm like, oh God, what she got into now? Because sometimes there's stray cats around. She tries to eat stray cat poop or whatever. I'm like, oh God, what's going on? I get a little bit closer, and I'm yelling at her. I'm like, get away. What the hell is it? I had a rotting dead chicken in my backyard.
Nice. Did you?
Yeah.
Did you put it on the grill?
No. It's not like sun tea. You can't just leave it out there to baste, if you will. Yeah. It's because my neighbor, he has a chicken coop.
Oh, nice. I've actually, me and Alex have actually talked. Now, in the community that we want to live in, which is the one we live in now, like we're hoping next year to hopefully be able to own something here. We'll see how life works out. But it might be a little hard. But if we could find somewhere with a little bit of space, we thought about trying to have a chicken coop. Maybe 5-6 chickens and just, eggs and just try to keep them alive. Apparently, there's a lot of things that kill chickens.
Yeah,
apparently
yeah.
Your dog is one of them.
No, Callie, the chicken was pre-dead before her. Yeah. So
now is pre-dead different than just being dead?
Well, as in Callie biting into the chicken, it was dead prior to the action of chewing into the chicken.
Because I got to be honest with you, the way my brain's been fried lately, I feel a little pre-dead.
Yeah.
I guess just fried.
Kind of feeling the same way.
just brain don't work anymore. Yeah. And it's starting to get frustrating. Like, remember, 4 or 5 months ago, I told you I was felt like I was really dumb. Like, I felt like I was getting dumber. Like, I had that feeling again where I'm like, duh. I don't know if it's like this midsummer, not the blues, but midsummer time. Like, it's just out, too much sun or something. I just feel completely stupid.
I don't know. I know. Maybe it's just your time to go stupid. I don't know. You know, there comes a time in every man's life where he acts really, really dumb. And you are now a man, my friend.
I just feel like eventually it's just going to stick and I'm just going to be dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, how much more life do you have? 30, 40 years? Ah, yeah. Who needs intelligence in that time?
Well, I hope I have more than 30. That would be a little tragic. That'd be a little early.
Yeah,
exit.
That'd be a little
bit of an early exit. Sure.
Well, you'd be dumb, so you won't know the number.
But
anyway.
I feel like dumb people always stay alive for a long time.
That is true.
Yeah, yeah.
That is true.
So, all right. So the chicken dead, you take the dead chicken in, and did you have to go get it?
Well, I go up to Cali. I'm barefoot right now, and I'm wearing shorts, and I'm worried this is an area I never gone up to, so I'm worried about poison ivy or whatever, but I gotta grab her because she's not responding to me. Meanwhile, as I'm pulling her away, she rarely does, she's like trying to attack me, like nip me, like she really wants
the chicken.
Toy
almost.
Yeah, I don't know if it's toy or she was like really diving into it and all, because it was so rotted, it like the belly was wide open.
Lovely.
To kind of look into. Yeah, so that thing's been dead for a little bit, so I'm pulling Callie back in. She's trying to bite me so she can turn around and bite the dead chicken. I'm worried about poison ivy and getting nipped at the same time, and then in the back of my head saying, well, I guess I'm the man of the house, and I guess one of the man of the house rules is you gotta go pick up dead chickens on your own. You can't ask your girlfriend, oh, hey babe, honey, small favor, I'll do the laundry tonight if
you just pick up the chicken.
Yeah, yeah. So
how'd
I
you
got
do it?
Kelly. I got a garbage bag and I put it over on top of the chicken and I grabbed through the bag and it was kind of a little awkward because it was in the bag but half of it was out and you're trying to say, okay, how do I adjust this without actually touching the rotting dead chicken?
You gotta go. You almost gotta like go gung ho. You just have to grab it and like stuff it into another plastic bag, like dog poop. Like one plastic, two plastic bags. Like ba boom, ba boom, and tie it off.
I don't do that with dog poop. I just take the bag inside out, grab it, and then pull it back.
See,
and then tie it up.
If I have one poop to pick up, that's what I do. But like sometimes there'll be like a couple poops in the backyard that I haven't gotten to, so I got to do a couple. So I'll do a poop into like use it as a glove essentially.
Mm. This is a really good intro into our guest.
Yeah. Well, I think
dead chickens.
Yeah, dead dog crap, dead chickens. You know. Anyway.
And our guest.
Yeah, I think it's time. I think it's time to get our guest on the line. Berlu, who we got?
We got voice actor Michael Bell. He's been in the industry for over 40 years. You might remember him.
What
as
industry? NFL.
The voice. Industry, voice acting, Scott. He did so many voices, it's almost too much to count.
It's ridiculous.
He did Duke and G.I. Joe. He's done the voice of the grandpa and Rugrats.
He was in Star Wars, I think, The Phantom Menace or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. It's just insane.
Just nuts. And what's even nuttier is he's talking to us.
Yes, where he's going to – that's the worst part of his resume coming up.
Yeah.
But without further ado, let's get Michael Bell on the line. Mike, can you hear Mike?
Hey.
I am on the line.
Okay. All right. So first off, Mike, thanks for giving us a few minutes here on the show. And where are we calling you at?
Encino, California.
California, yeah. How's the weather? Is it beautiful? Because it's been awful here in New Jersey pretty much every
single
day. What
does awful mean?
Like rainy, thunderstorms, humid, nonstop rain for the last week and a half. It's been fun.
Well, we could use some nonstop rain here. It's been hot and dry.
So, all right. So, I mean, looking at your resume, it's it's pretty much endless on how many different voices you've done and how much work you've had. Were you brought up as an actor, or did you always have voice work in mind?
I knew nothing about voice work. I wanted to be an actor, I think, since I was a kid, and studied and trained and went to the High School of Performing Arts in New York, which trained a lot of young actors that went into the world and came to Hollywood and tried to get into films. And we didn't have, how old I am, we didn't have much in the way of television in those days. But I was you'd say pissing up a rope, as the English would say. I was this tall, skinny kid, and the largest part of my body were my ears. And I was not Hollywood's idea of a young leading man at all. And I was taller than most of the actors that were leading men. You know, there was Alan Ladd and people that Humphrey Bogart, Jimmy Cagney, they all came up to my hip. And other than John Wayne, that was it. And I didn't look like the average teenager or the Hollywood concept of a teenager. So my struggle was long, and I knew nothing about voice. I think voiceovers were, there were no voiceovers then, particularly. I think it was just Mel Blanc and Paul Frees and a couple of other guys.
So, I mean, how did you hear about it? Were you, when you come up with an opportunity like this, are you almost kind of reluctant, or is it just like an exciting new opportunity when somebody comes up to you and says, you know, we got these new cartoon series and wanted you to try out some stuff?
Well, actually, I after working for a long time and suddenly getting into my 30s, well into my 30s, I suddenly started to connect on camera. I was brought to the attention of a guy by the name of Joseph Sutton, who was, I think, head of music over at NCA. And somehow or another, through my agent, my commercial agent, I started to do a lot of commercials. That's when I started to get ahead, started to make some bucks in the industry, doing a lot of commercials, but all on camera. And about that time, I was hoping to get some television. Nothing was happening. And then my agent, who was the brother of brothers, Joe Sutton, said, go see Joe. And I went to see Joe and just said, I can get you something at Universal. You're a good type. And I read for something and did The Bold Ones and got put under contract at Universal Studios and started to take off on camera. And I met a young lady who was one of the top voiceover ladies in the business. And I wasn't sure what she did, but it was great. It was fun listening to her and seeing what she did. She said, you should be doing voiceovers. This is a waste of your time doing on camera. You're never going to do the things you want to do as an actor. And you're able to do all these voices and characters we always play around. So she put together a little tape for me in her home and played the piano while I did stuff. And she brought it over to the agency. And the agency said, yeah, geez, you're right on the nose. And then one day she brought me into one of her sessions with Mel Blanc. And I watched what they were doing. And I said, that's what I want to do. And so Noah Blanc was really nice. That was Mel's son. He said, Mike, why don't you get in the booth with Dad? And that was, I mean, get in the booth with Dad. Please. Quotes. Get in the booth with Dad. I mean, why didn't he say get in the booth with your God? So I got in the booth with Dad, and we were doing something. And he said, Dad, I want you to do an East Indian thing. And Mike, you're buying some rugs or whatever it was for some commercial. I was going to make money at it. It was a gig, and I said okay. And then Mel did something. He said, "No, Dad, I want an East Indian accent. I didn't mean American Indian." And he said, and then he tried again. He said, "No, Dad, that's not the Indian accent that I want." He said, "Mike, you do an Indian accent, East Indian?" I went, "Yeah." And I thought Mel was going to, I thought he was going to whack me in the head or something. And he said, "Oh, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead, go do it." I said, "Okay," and I did it. And he said, "Oh, okay, Dad. Dad, you be the guy buying something. Mike, you be the seller of the rug because it's good Indian."
No,
no. So I went home. I said, "I beat Mel Blanc out of a job. Jeez."
now, take us into what voice acting was like then. Are they Are they just feeding you lines and repeating them? Are you having conversations? Is it just you and one microphone and you're reading through a script? Are you seeing anything on the screen? Or what are the early days of your voice work like?
It was a combination of either dubbing or just doing the work and like a radio show, and then they would animate to it. You get your copy and you sit down. If you're talking about Smurfs and G.I. Joe and Transformers and all that, you just basically get a copy and you're up there. Sometimes you're working with, at those days, we worked with all the actors together. It was like a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And then you did a couple of takes. Sometimes you do three takes in a row. Sometimes you just do a whole piece.
Right.
It depended on the director, what they thought they would want and how they would want to edit it. And then eventually, as the years went by, we all got very, very busy, and it was hard to get a full cast together. So they would have you do it by yourself. So you wound up acting in absentia. With, you know, all these other actors were in absentia. You were acting by yourself, responding to something, and then, you know, responding to you by yourself.
Now, you know, does each voice actor have a specific, like style? Like, do people actually come and, like, dress their part when they're doing the role? Or do you just, like, does everyone have their little quirks? Like, are you like, looking into the eyes of other people as they do their lines? Or you, is it kind of you're just focused on your own thing?
Oh, no, you never take your eyes off the script. Hmm. Your eyes stay on the script. It's how I teach. I teach voice animation. After years of having done it, because people are not aware that it's not like auditioning or working in a scene with another actor. You look up from the script, you got a mic in front of you, and the mic is dictates everything. How close you get, everything that you do is about that. So it's as if you're in separate rooms, but it's all on the script. You don't look in anybody's eyes. As far as styles are concerned, everybody does what they do, you know. And when we started, we kind of, well, to some degree, you kind of imitated in the beginning. We did Peter Lorre or Boris Karloff or people of that ilk that were, you know, had really strange sounds, interesting qualities, wrinkles to their voice or to their placement, to their phrasing. And if it was a bad guy, you could pick one of the movie screen guys that you would do. It was either that or a gruff voice or a deep voice, and you can only do so many of those. So you really had to find some character to your voice. And you pick from life, you pick a grandpa or somebody's grandpa or a friend who had a strange quality, and you wound up like a minor bird, you know, doing everybody else but yourself, unless you're doing yourself. Unless you're a young hero, then it was you.
And with some of these roles, did you come across a role early on that like was special to you from like a kid? Like, for what I see, you were a part of like the Super Friends and things like that, stuff that you could have grown up in comic books and stuff. Did any role in particular, it's like, oh, that takes me back to childhood or anything like that?
Well, I was a radio baby. I used to listen to radio all the time. I used to listen to Let's Pretend and Archie Andrews and Lights Out and things of that, you know. And that, so you would hear radio actors, and you might start imitating certain sounds that you've heard. I would imitate actors on screen. I would do imitations of people that I saw, an imitation of John Wayne or an imitation of Jack Palance or an imitation of whomever. And then bring that over and carry that over. So when a character came up and they said, this is what we call a black hat, you know, an evil character, I would try to pick that actor who might have been cast in that role if it was an on-camera role. And I thought, well, that's what most of us do. And you develop your style. You find new characters all the time. New characters pop up all the time. Not so much today. They don't have many character actors today that you can imitate. I mean, or even leads. I mean, who the hell's going to do Tom Cruise? Yeah, I mean, what does that sound like? Or, you know, what does anybody sound like that's today, other than Emmett Walsh? You know, he's got that back voice, and he's got a sound back here, and he's sort of crouchy. It just really depends upon the actor you're imitating, but. You bring that to life in the script, yeah.
Now, you have, like I said, you look at just your IMDb and things, and it's countless amounts of things. Do you ever run into, you know, like writer's block, where you can't seem to come up with something different, or do you start to notice that your voice sounds really similar to something else you've done? And do you go into this, like, before you get the job, are you preparing weeks ahead of time on a voice and talking to yourself, or are you kind of going in the studio and figure it out?
Oh, I talk to myself all the time, but not for any other reason than I'm just going crazy.
Oh, gotcha.
No, actually, you go into studio and you used to just get in the old days, you'd get a script as you went in. You sat down and you saw it for the first time. And you'd sit around the table and you'd do a run through with the rest of the cast and you'd come up with something. If it was a generic farmer or an old man or a genie or hobgoblin or whatever the heck it was or something, you'd leprechaun, you knew he was Irish, so you'd have an Irish dialect. It's somebody, a Scottish dialect or a Russian dialect, you know, whatever it was, you'd have it. You have it in your bag. You have all that stuff. Every now and then you try to find something new, but you have most of that stuff. And there's only so much you can change. I mean, it's not magic. If you look at Mel Blanc, and once again, if you listen to his characters, Sylvester and Bugs and all the others, Mel is in there. You can hear the tone of Mel.
Right.
Except he's such a good actor that you don't say, oh yeah, that's Sylvester with the twist. You say, that's Bugs Bunny. I mean, that's what that is. That's Pepe Le Pew, where that's that French accent. But the point is that Mel is still there. You still have the core. It's still the basis of who you are. I mean, every now and then I'm able to really twist and change and work hard at it. But more often than not, you're going to hear a bit of Michael Bell in there.
You've done some voices for pretty much as a guy who's in his 40s, grew up in the early 80s. You pretty much did voices for almost every cartoon series I ever listened to. I mean, just amazing being Duke from G.I. Joe, being a part of Transformers. Do you consider, like, that kind of time frame, the early 80s, almost like the golden age of, like, cartoons and voices and pretty much studios really concentrating on that genre to promote to children?
Yeah, I think for me it was a golden age. For many of us it was a golden age, absolutely. Because you worked, I remember working with actors that used to do, who were much older than me, that did radio, and they used to run from studio to studio doing radio show after radio show. Herb Ellis used to do all these radio shows, and he was running from one place to another. Many actors at that time did that. That's what we did in terms of the 80s of doing animation. I was running from G.I. Joe to Transformers to the Smurfs, back to the Snorks, and then it called in for Inhumanoids and then back for something else and Super Friends. And yeah, it was great. It was cool. It was golden. I mean, after a while, stuff began to thin out, but it took 40 years for me before stuff began to thin out.
Now, do you ever, do you ever get a project that you become attached to the point where you, like, hope it continues and goes on and on and on, or were you always looking for the next thing? Like, is it something, like, where you're like, God, I wish I can get this 8-season role on something, or do you just more worry about moving? Okay, just got to get the next job, the next job, the next job.
Yeah, it was always the next job. It was the next job. And if you had, we didn't know how long Smurfs would last. We had no idea how long any of the shows, whether it was Transformers or G.I. Joe or any of them. You know, you did a show and it went for a season. If you came back, you came back and you're thrilled. But we worked, because it was a golden age, we worked at so many other things during that time. That made it so viable for us. Now, of course, you know, if somebody said to me, I still read, I still audition. If you've got a reoccurring character on a series that may last a year or may last 2 years, it's gold. I mean, that's really gold. That's money under the couch. That's money you found behind the pillows in your couch.
Right.
I mean, that really is, and everybody looks forward to a series. I mean, think of it. I think the the people that did The Simpsons had not a clue.
Yeah.
I mean, they did that. They did that for a non-camera show for what's in it. I mean, marvelous actress. They did it for her show. It's just, they were an interstitial. They were just a little piece that was in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dan Castellaneta and all the others, they just tripped. They just fell into a pot of gold with that one. Mm. 20 years now, later, 30, whatever.
With all these classic cartoons coming into movies nowadays, do you go in to watch the movies, and do you ever sit back and critique kind of how you hear the voices, them trying it today versus yesteryear?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. In fact, I don't even go to animated films because there's so many stars in them. To me, that's an anathema to me. I won't see animation with movie stars in it. And that's all there are for the most part. I mean, every now and then I'll get called in to do some dubbing or some background voice or something, you know. Mm-hmm. You be the guy who sells the meat pies in the corner or whatever it is. You know, you're the bad guy, comes and says, "Hey, what's going on here?" That's it. What are you kids doing on the and it's a big deal, you know. And I certainly have no interest in that. I was doing Rugrats, which I had no idea was going to be a huge series.
Yeah,
it's coming back, I'm told.
Oh, is it?
They just ordered 26 more. Yeah.
Wow.
So all of us are waiting with bated breath. Are they going to use us again? Will it be us? Because we were regulars.
You played the dad, right?
Yeah, I was Grandpa Boris, the Jewish grandpa.
Okay.
I was Chucky's dad, Chaz. I was Drew Pickles, Angelica's dad, and I was Reptar and Spike the dog.
Now so it's going to be like Seinfeld, or someone's going to be like,
no, they'll bring in LeBron James to play Chaz. I'm quite sure.
Well, you actually directed him once before, right?
Yeah, I did. I directed him in his own animated series for 2 seasons, I think it was. And that was a trip. That was fun. I had no idea who that was, to be perfectly honest. It's not my world. I mean, the producer called me in and I had lunch with him in Santa Monica. He said, "You know, I heard some tapes that you did of some amateur actors, and you really, and one of them being my wife," he said, "and wow, you really made them sound good. So I have an actor who is not an actor particularly, but he has his own series, and we'd like to get somebody that can really work with him and some of the other members of the cast." And I said, "Okay, who is it?" He said, "It's LeBron James." And I said, "Gee, I don't know anything about rap." And he said, "What?" I said, I don't know anything about rap. You know, and he said, no, it's not rap." I said, "Oh, what does he do?" And he said, "He's a basketball player." And I said, "Well, that's the second thing I don't know anything about." He said, you want to talk ballet, you got the right guy, but, you know, forget it. I don't know anything about basketball, a little baseball, but that's all." And he said, "Well, don't worry about it." So we went to Florida and to the American Airlines studios where they were playing basketball. And I watched him play and I was knocked out. And then it was my turn to make him watch me play and make him play my game. And it was fun. It was interesting.
Did you say, "Hey, sit down, I'm the LeBron James of voice acting"?
Yeah, well, he went in. It was a little tiny booth. There was hardly any room for either of us. And he's huge. I mean, he stood up and I was, you know, it looked like I was just about at waist with his crotch. I said, "Okay, you better sit down." And we brought the microphone down. I said, "Okay, yeah, let's go." And he had a little cap, you know, he had that baseball cap on.
Yep.
And I said, that has to come off. He said, "What are you talking about, man? That's my hat. It's my thing." I said, "No, it's not your thing." I said, "The microphone is here. We're not going to hear what you have to say. It'll bang against the mic. We'll be here all day. So, you know, LeBron, take it off." He said, "No, man, I don't want to take this off." I said, and I just took it off his hand. Took it off his head, and I whacked it in his lap. I said, "Here, now it's off." And I looked out the window of the door of the booth. There was a little window in the booth. And he was settling himself. He wasn't particularly thrilled. And I looked out the booth, and I see the producers absolutely doubled over, nervous and frightened, going, "Oh, my God, you know, he's going to kill me, and he's going to walk out, and he's going to be furious." And he was cool. He said, "Okay, let's go." So I said, "Okay." So we started doing it. I said, "You have a scene here where you have to cry. And this is your series. You wrote this, man. And I really want to see some tears." He said, "Say what?" I said, "I want to see some tears." He said, tears? I said, yeah. I don't want to hear, ooh, anybody can do that. This is your show. That's the perfect world. And he did.
Wow.
He got teary, which was really good. And finally, at one point, his character has to do a rap song. Now, I had heard the rap song originally done by a rapper. It was an original. So I had to play it first to see how it would go and how much time it would take and how much he would have to do. So I did it. I listened to it and I learned it. And he said, okay, fine. I said, go ahead and do it. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. I said, I don't want to do rap. I said, what are you afraid of? You just put the earbuds in your ear. The music will play. The guy does a voice under you. So you just follow him. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. I said, okay, I'll tell you what, LeBron. I'm a 70-year-old Jewish white man. I'm going to tell everybody around me I was able to do rap and LeBron James couldn't. How does that sound? Oh my God. And he looked at me and went, shit. All right. And he went and he did it. It was really cool.
That's a great story.
It was really cool. Yeah, it was really cool.
That's awesome.
No, I mean, you have, like, with all this experience, is there one role that sticks out in your mind that was the most challenging to you coming up with something? Like, is there something that you look back on your resume and career that you, like, that was the hardest or the most involved or the maybe the hardest script? Is there one project that stands out, or did they all start to blend together after a while?
Well, it wasn't that they blended together. You know, you just want to say, what can I do to bring something fresh to this?
Mm-hmm.
I think the most fun probably two projects. One was the character of Opus in A Wish for Wings, that work, which I did for Spielberg. And it's a wonderful Christmas special with live action intertwined. And the late Robin Williams and Dustin Hoffman were voices in it as well.
Nice.
And I played Opus, the lead character. And that was all by a hook and crook. They had gotten the first guy to do it, and they changed their mind, didn't like him. Then they got the second guy and weren't sure about him. I think they went with Frank Welker, who was wonderful. And they said, you know, it's not exactly where we want to be. And then finally they said, oh, shit, let's call in Michael Bell, who they didn't want in the first place. Didn't want me in the first place because I had done too much. They wanted a new sound, so I did it. And then they took a couple of characters, a couple of other actors, and my voice, and they brought it out to, I'm told, they brought it to... Steven Spielberg's son, who was a young boy at the time, and said, which of these voices sound like Opus to you? And he said, that one, and that was me. So I wound up doing it. And that's a wonderful, wonderful. If you ever see it, you can always download. It's called A Wish for Wings That Work. It's very hip. Very, very hip. And, of course, Rugrats, the voice of Chaz and Grandpa Boris. Grandpa Boris is my Jewish grandpa and my Jewish grandmother. I mean, it's both combined. They both sounded like that. And that was fun to be able to do once in my career. And of course, Chaz. You know, Chaz following Christine Cavanaugh's lead, who chose to do Chucky as this little pig leg that, you know, the days will probably. And I said, as soon as I heard her, I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do because it has to be hereditary.
That's awesome.
And there's that. The hardest probably was. And I did a regular series. I did a series called The Inhumanoids and played a real tough, deep, you know, deep voice character, Blackthorn. You know, it was all the way down here, really macho, whatever, big businessman. And at one point, you had about three voices you could give the producers at that time. Even though they paid you for one, then you had three voices. And they had an evil character that they asked me to do, which was like a giant ball of phlegm. And I had to talk like I literally was hocking up a loogie with every word. And that was a killer.
Well, being a person who teaches classes to people on how to do voice acting, what do you think is the biggest issue when people coming in? Do you see them not going under, not really going for it? Are they going way too over the top? What do you think is the number one issue that people don't see going into voice acting?
Well, if they're studying me, they often come unprepared, not aware that they're unprepared. It's what they think they should be doing. It's what they think they sound like. Some of them may be able to give a good rendition of a character that they've heard, but there's no acting ability behind it. There's no acting behind it. Again, using Mel Blanc as an example, he was an actor. he was able to immerse himself in that character. So you never questioned the fact that Bugs Bunny was Sylvester or Daffy Duck or whatever it was, that they were all these different characters because of what he infused in them as an actor. Some people come to me and say, I have a great voice. I said, really? He said, yeah, I can do this right over there. Or I can go over here. Sometimes I voice it. And I said, yeah, it's really great. It's really good, except it doesn't, but you have no acting behind it. Mm-hmm. I don't hear what you're doing. This doesn't sound like an actor. Everybody's got a voice, you know, but you may have a Stradivarius, but if you don't know how to play it, they might as well keep it in the closet. So you have to learn how to do it. So there are some people that have that ability, can step into it and do wonderful stuff. But they've been doing it for years privately while they were loading potatoes up on the dock, or while they were cleaning someone's toilets. They just had learned and studied and trained. They just hadn't hit it yet. They hadn't been found yet. But I get a lot of people a lot of students that think they can do a dialect and really can't because they're not competitive enough. And I work with them on that. I've been teaching Japanese students now for the past 11 years. They fly in from, drama students. They fly in from Osaka and from Tokyo for the past 11 years. All new students all the time. They're about 18, 19 years old when I train them. Even though they speak fluent Japanese, I know exactly what the script should sound like when they're finished.
Wow.
Because I know whether they got it or they don't have it, whether they're faking it or not faking it. That's a gift, I guess.
So after all these years, after all these roles, after teaching, after seeing kids come up, do you still love it?
I still love it. Yeah, it's great. I would rather direct, though, than do it. That's the one thing that I miss. Mm-hmm. I directed Tim Curry and a group of kids in Peter Pan, with Jason Marsden as Peter Pan and Debbie Derryberry as Tinkerbell, and a whole bunch of kids and a wonderful male cast, adult male cast of marvelous actors, and Tim Curry as Captain Hook. That was a joy. That was really great to see that work at the end of its at the end of the season. And Tim got an Emmy for it. That I love doing. But I haven't had that chance to do that because I did it and then did about 40 of them or something like that, or 50 of them. Got tremendous success out of it, but for some reason it just never it never happened that I got requested to do it again. So I wound up just acting.
Now, as you go to these Comic-Cons and get invited and all, is it an honor or is it almost somewhat annoying if somebody comes up to you and say, like, do Duke, do the Rugrats,
well,
something like that?
You know, it's fun being at it's fun being at conventions. I like Comic-Cons. They're really fun. I love meeting the fans. I mean, they're really cool. I really do enjoy meeting them. And it's also, you know, be honest, it's financially remunerative. You know, people want your autograph, and there's my autograph is for sale. Unfortunately, I'm a voice slut. So I said, okay, great. They get a picture. I pay for the photos and all these things, and I sign my autograph and give me a couple of bucks, and it's great. And they're, but when somebody says, do you remember when Prowl turned around to first aid and said, I said, no, don't do that. Do not ask me what I said 40 fucking years ago, okay?
Yeah, right.
Because I don't know what I had for breakfast.
Yeah.
So you tell me what you want said, and I'll write it down on the picture. And oh, okay, great. And someone would come over and say, you know, I can do Cracker Jack. I said, and get away from my booth. Go find your booth.
I did that already. You get away from me. Wow. It's funny. That's I completely understand. I mean, we've done 210 of these or whatever, and I can't remember what we talked about four episodes,
course,
4 weeks ago.
You remember when you asked that actor? Get out of here. Hang on 1 second. Hang on 1 second, guys. Hang on 1 second.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, and you look, I think it's great. I think people want to imitate you and, you know, and come up and say they did, you know, I can do this. And I remember when I was able to, I can do that voice. I could do Chaz. And I said, that's really great. I'm really thrilled. You want a picture? If not, move on.
Now, Mike, I mean, I guess one last question here. When you find yourself like looking back at everything you did, is there something that you wish you had a chance to do, or a character you wish that you got that offer because you know you would have nailed it? Or do you look back and go, damn, I pretty much have done everything I could dream and more?
You know, I really can't be unsatisfied. But sure, I don't think there's one actor that doesn't say, I wish I had a shot at that. Or I had a shot at that, I didn't get it. And then heard the actor that did and go, you know, that's nowhere near what I did. I really should have done that one. They were wrong to pick that actor. And we do that.
Right.
We all do that. You go, ah, damn, that would have been a great fun. Even though it didn't go anywhere and it wasn't a series, it was just a real chunky character that was just full of all kinds of rainbow sounds that you were able to bring up. And then you hear it and it's very standard, boring, you know, deep voice, whatever. And you go, nah, that's not, wasn't it? So, yeah. And as far as shows go, I don't think there's one actor actor that wouldn't love to have done The Simpsons or Futurama, because that's, you know, Billy, bless his heart, is enormously talented and deserves to have that. Some of those other guys. But boy, you think, wow, I could have killed with those. That would great fun. It would have been to do that for 20 years and to go home with that kind of money. Ooh, wow. Yeah.
Well, Mike, it's go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
I guess one last question is, when you don't do a voice for a while, do you have to actually practice to get it up, or is it just like riding a bike?
Practice to get it up. That really makes me nervous.
Well, Mike has to do that, so.
Yeah.
You know. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, it's called getting a voice on. Actually, when they were doing Community, you know, the television series or the live action series, the comedy series Community.
Yes.
They had an episode called G.I. Jeff, and they turned it into an animated thing, because apparently the lead character and the lead actor in there gets hit on the head and goes into a coma, and it becomes an animated series. His life becomes animated while he's in the coma, and it's G.I. Joe. And they wanted to make sure that if they use Duke and some of the other characters, they still sounded like that, because it's 30, 40 years later. So my agent called me. She said, they want to know if you can do Duke. And I said, yeah, okay. So the producer's going to call you. The director producer is going to call you. And so make sure, you know, you can ask you to read a couple of lines. I said, she said, you're not embarrassed to do that? I said, no, no, I care. Oh, sure, I'm glad. So he called, and I knew he was on the phone. He said, and the phone rang, and I picked up the phone and went, hello? And he said, hi, can I speak to Uncle Bill? I said, sure, Dad. And then I got on the phone and he said, hello. And I went, hello? And he went, yeah, is Michael Bell? I went, yeah, what do you want? And he said, Michael Bell, the voice of Duke? I said, yeah, what is it? And there was a silence. And I said, okay, knowing is half the battle.
Yo, Joe.
Is that what you wanted to hear? He went, oh, okay, got it. I'll see you at the studio. I'll arrange with your agent. No sweat. Thanks, Mike.
You could definitely make a mean like prank call album. You would be put crank anchors out of business, like crush that. But
I'd wind up going, I'm watching you, and then sit there and go. You know.
Mike, I want to thank you so much for giving us a few minutes. I could pick your brain for hours, and you know, you have so many different things, and we'd love to talk to you again. But thanks a lot for giving us a few minutes on the show, man, and good luck with whatever projects you decide to keep doing.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, see, that's what I want, the ability to just be like, just go into a different character and voice, and like get if people are bothering me, just become someone else for a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't act well enough to be like, you know, like I'm really annoyed by this guy. Like, do something so that voice so awful that like makes them leave me alone.
Yeah, yeah. Like, even if you're on a roll, like 2 sentences in, you're probably going to lose it or something, or be like me and end up in a Russian accent.
We should ask Mike, how do I do an accent without becoming Russian, by the third line?
Like, if there's a cartoon series that are 2 sentences long,
you're good.
I got this.
But for some reason, my inner Putin just comes out of me every third line.
He just takes my hat off and just throws it at me. You're no LeBron.
Well, yeah, that was really cool, man. He was very, very interesting. You know, it's almost hard to ask him about specific things because he's done so much. Like, I'm even looking now and I'm like missing a couple things that, you know, Metal Gear Solid and Ninja Gaiden, and he was in Star Wars, you know.
Yeah.
So it's pretty wild. Pretty wild. It's funny. Yeah. I like to also, too, because I always thought about, like, I never know how to get into voice acting. I should have asked him that, but I always thought it would be something fun to try. Because we do this, so we use our voices here. Uh-huh. I did the commentary a couple times for hockey stuff I was telling you about, and I always thought it'd be fun to just even try for someone's like short animated, you know, 5-minute film or something like that. Just to be a character would be fun.
Well, he seemed, from what his discussions were, it sounds like he's like a Simon Cowell. Like, you probably want to go to somebody that's like. Like, he's like top of the mountain. You got to go mid mountain for somebody to show you the way up. You know what I mean?
All right, let me Google mid mountain
mid mountain voice man.
Hi, this is Tim Robbins. I'm mid mountain voice man.
Mike Berlew, the mid mountain voice man and snake milk salesman. What the hell is this website?
I gotta parse out my businesses, you know. I put all of them out there. Hopefully one gets a hit.
And I apologize to our audience for the 900 inside jokes we just did, if you are new. But all right. I guess before we go today, I am dying to go on vacation, which I'm going on Saturday, bro, which is awesome.
I got so excited, and then you said going on vacation.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Not yet. But that'll happen eventually.
I'm like, the podcast is mine, finally.
Well, you remember what happened when the podcast was yours? Your short shenanigans? Yeah, you're talking about terrorism.
I talked about being in Turkey, no towels, trying to pay with a Discover card, which is impossible in Europe.
Yeah. Listen, we it's like yin and yang, you know. Like, if you don't have me, you go off the rails and you start talking about terrorism. Well, anyway, so I'm dying for vacation, thank God. But I did actually have a couple things this weekend that I thought were pretty cool. I went on Saturday, fellow comic or friend, my buddy Matt Jenkins, very funny comic. He invited me last year, and I ended up not being able to go, but he invited me this year to what he called the Hydration Games.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, sure. And I read the description, and essentially the Hydration Games is a barbecue, and then at night you play. Kind of like, I would describe it as Manhunt and paintball with water guns. Now, they had like 30 something guns. There was about 35 people there, I would say. A couple other comics, John Trumbull and Dave Durkin, and a couple other guys. So it was pretty cool. So I was like, all right, I'll go. And the fiance couldn't go, so she was with her friends. And I was like, all right, well, I might as well go. I'm not doing anything. And super nice time, lots of food, tons of food, and we're getting ready. And so the first thing was now Matt's girlfriend was the one, she was like really the one kind of in charge of like the water games. And the first thing we did was the old classic balloon toss, like the water balloon toss.
Now, was she wearing like a powdered wig and makeup, kind of like the Hunger Games, like really getting the character?
No. Matt was, but not her.
Oh, no. That's total Matt. That's total Matt.
That's so Matt. So
every open mic, we know Matt. Powder wig, good job.
We get it. You're black with the powder wig. It's funny. We give it to you. It's funny, but Yeah. It's running old. So we start with the balloon toss. So every time you toss the balloon, you would have to take a step back, you know, like, and then get further and further away and try to be the last one. So I picked Dave Durkin as my partner. Now,
any particular reason, now, curiosity?
No, just because we both didn't know a lot of people there, and we're both standing there. So I'm like, all right, Dave, let's go. All right. Now, Dave is not – I would not put Dave in the LeBron James category of human beings, okay? Probably on the opposite side. If there was a Venn diagram, he would be in the other circle.
Yeah. I listened to the Dumb Fellas podcast where KP Burke was talking about Durkin trying to swim to a jet ski. He basically said it was 2 hours of butterfly, and they were late returning their jet skis. But go on.
Nice. We take one. Now, Mike, like you can see me. The first throw was this far apart. Like you were literally, like face to face.
Like basically handing off.
Yeah. So I'm throwing to Dave, and I go to roll it to Dave. And he bobbles it, and it kind of falls, but stays. It doesn't pop. Now, these were black balloons. They were really dark, so that's the only thing I would give him any leeway on, okay?
Okay.
Because it was nighttime. Second throw, I take a step back. He throws it to me. I catch it. Now, we are the third throw. Now, Mike, we're about this far apart. If you can see me.
Okay, maybe about 3 feet.
Yeah, 2.5 feet, 3 feet. Right. I throw it to Durkin. It bounces off his fumbly hands, and he breaks the damn balloon. We lasted, like, not even to the fun part, like throwing it back and forth. Like ooh, will it break? Like, we were out instantly. Instantly. Like, people got, like, Pam the Butts was there. She got, like, pretty freaking far, like 40 feet away, maybe 30 feet away, like pretty far. And they're launching it. I'm like, God damn it, Dave. Like, the worst.
You two are sitting on the sidelines just pouting as you're seeing all the other comics having fun while you're eliminated from the hydration games.
I gotta admit, as far as comic representation, nobody really represented themselves very well in that. Pam did. The other comics also out relatively quick. But, you know, comics not the most, generally not the most athletic people.
If we were athletic, we wouldn't have to be funny.
Yeah. So that was fun. So then the hydration games start. Okay, the manhunting. Now, it's pretty cool how they organized it. They organized it into, so first there was two teams, okay, and they gave, you picked a number. I got number 4, and that means I was 4 in the draft of the guns. So I had my eye on the one weapon I wanted. It looked like Chewbacca's like crossbow gun, which it's funny because Chewbacca's gun makes zero sense if you think about it. It's a crossbow, but all it does is shoot lasers. Like, you can't pull back a laser. Like, it's a really stupid weapon, but there was like big weapon, big weapons. And
broke my string, can't shoot my laser.
Yeah. So I liked this one because it looked kind of lightweight. Like, it was a medium size. I didn't want one of the big mamas because they weigh you down. Okay. Yeah. So I got it. And then as I got it, I was happy I got it. I went to shoot it to test it out how to shoot. It had 3 streams. So it had 2 out wide and 1 in the middle. Okay.
Oh,
so
okay.
This is an effective weapon because if you get hit, you're out. So if I could shoot at you, Mike, and it can cover your left and your right, that's a pretty badass weapon.
Indeed.
Right. Okay. So we all pick our guns, and we had to wear red and blue pennies. And if you were on the blue team, you had to put a blue what are those called? Like those glow in the dark. See, this is where the brain's not kicking in. Mm-hmm. Those little bands that glow in the dark.
I know what you're talking about. I don't know. I don't know if it's got an official name. You're talking about like a bracelet.
Like a glow stick. Kind of like a glow stick.
Right, I don't think it has an official name, so I won't call you stupid on that. Well, we'll continue.
If anything, we'll just both admit we're pretty freaking stupid. Yeah. If two brains can't come up with it. So you had to put them on. So it was pretty cool. They did a really nice job. I was like, wow, this is very prepared. And I had talked to Matt like, dude, this is like really good idea. Like, how did the neighbors like – react, because it was two blocks one way and one block down, and then two blocks the other way and one block down. So it was a pretty wide area to play in. Like, it was big. Wow. It was funny because when I drove up there, I guess it was a pretty Jewish neighborhood. So it was Saturday. Mm-hmm. So they were all walking around in full, like, black hat, black suit. And I'm like, oh, man, like, I hope none of them get shot with water. Like, I was calling them the Jewish obstacles. Like, don't shoot the innocent Jewish people. But he said, like,
that's never happened in history.
So he said that, like, the neighborhood, like, they kind of know about it. Like, the first year, he said they were like, "What the heck are you doing?" And, like, he said even a couple random people got shot. But he's like, in recent years, they're kind of like, "Oh, yeah, I remember when you guys do that." And they're kind of, like, supportive of it. So so the games begin. So, oh, it's Capture the Flag. I don't know if I mentioned that. So okay. there's a flag, like, two blocks diagonally, and then another one, like, three blocks diagonally. So it was really cool. So blue team had to go one way. I was on the blue team and go the red way. And it was pretty cool because, like, you had to decide, like, who would defend the base and who would go. So the first thing I decided to do, my truck was parked on the street. I decided to lay down in the bed of my truck. Pretty smart move. Mm-hmm. And then, sure enough, Matt Jenkins comes running cocksure towards our flag, and I just pop out of the top of the truck and nail him, and he just gets eliminated, which was pretty awesome. But it was fun. There was water balloons. Like, you could use balloons as grenades and stuff like that. But the problem is it's on the honor system, and I'm telling you, not everybody's very honest. People mm-hmm. want to stay in games like that. Matt's brother, I must have shot him like five times, and the other guy hit him with a water balloon, and he kept saying he was still in. So Matt's brother, if you're listening, you're a cheater.
Is he going by, like, war rules where it's like, no, I hit my arm, so I can't use my left arm, but I can still go into the battle, like Saving Private Ryan?
No, I mean, the rules were laid out. If you get hit, you're supposed to put your arms up and say, I'm out. You know, and it's basically comes down to elimination. Now, we won the first game. I got out eventually, and I played a second game, which was fun. There was a bunch of games I left after the second. But the second game, they reversed the draft order, so I got down. I had the fourth to last pick,
nice.
And all I had was a little tiny pistol.
So we were
doing pretty good, and I had run out of water eventually, and I said, dude, we're going to get the flag. And I got towards the flag, and we're shooting, and there, the guys are covering me. And this girl pops up with a water gun. She's trying to shoot us, and I duck down, and I had one water balloon. And I pomp up, and I just I just whip it as hard as I can. And all of a sudden, I hear, p-tuff, p-tuff, and I hear, ow! And the balloon didn't break. It just hit her square in the face.
Wow. You volleyball spiked her, and it didn't even blow up.
Yeah. No, it literally bounced off her face because I heard it bounce and then, like, hit the hood of the car. So I heard, like, boom, like a deep.
Did you turn to Durkin and be like, you see? It's not that hard.
It's funny. I never even saw Durkin out there. I don't know if he just, like, hid somewhere in one spot. He was on the other team. So I don't even know if he really played. And then John Trumbull, a comic who's been on this, a comic who won one of my favorite episodes of this podcast. Win, lose, or draw. Your 40th birthday celebration. You guys should go back and check that one. That one's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. It's like a live game show / roast. He didn't even play. He came to the hydration games and set out.
Just, like, sitting on the side reading comic books?
Yeah.
I'm here if you need me.
Yeah, like doodling his version of Aquaman. Like,
anybody want to discuss Superman 78? No?
No.
Go on with your games.
Yeah. A bad move, John Trumbull. But, yeah, I hit her in the face. But I went and I grabbed the flag, and I started sprinting. Now, I'm not tooting my own horn, but I think when I get ahead of steam, I could run pretty fast. And everyone's like, oh, crap. And, like, I got, like, pretty close to the base, and then all of a sudden one of their dudes popped out from behind a car and shot me right in the chest. I was so close to, like, glory.
No.
But, all in all, it was It was pretty awesome. It was like a really fun event. It felt like being a kid again. That's what it felt like, yeah, with the neighborhood, like playing Manhunt and stuff like that. And I know it's like a little bit of a long-winded story, but I wanted to kind of just real quick get into that notion of being a kid. Like, my game was Manhunt. Like, I remember we played a lot. We played in the park. We played a couple blocks. We played where you could go through people's backyards and stuff like that. And I just can't see that flying today at all. No. Like, people are just so weird about stuff like that. Like, did you have, like, a neighborhood game or a game, like, you remember that was, like, your game as a kid?
We had, like, a crabapple bush in my house in South Brunswick, and we would have, like, crabapple fights and all, where just, you would get, like, a, like, heaps and heaps of crabapples, and then you would just hide everywhere, and I mean, there was no, like, point system or whatever, but there was just something so rewarding.
No,
it's
there,
like
there was a point system. It was the first person to cry who was you had to quit because they got hit in the face with the crab apple.
That's what it was. Because, like, there are times where, like, you were hiding in, like, the garage attic and all, where you could look down at the garage and, like, people would peek in because the garage door is open. And you're pelting them from the top and all with crab apples, like, three different people. And it's just so rewarding at times.
Yeah. And then we had itchy ball fights. You remember? I don't know. We call them itchy balls.
Are those spiked little?
Yeah, the little brown spiky balls. I don't really know what they're called, but we call them itchy balls. And we did the same thing. You would get a bunch and just hurl them at each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what the name is either. So we're going 2 for 2 on getting dumb now. So we need to find out glow-in-the-dark bracelet and itchy ball names. Put that down.
I'm sure if you Google itchy balls, you might get an interesting result.
So it's called gonorrhea, Scott. So. Yeah, I mean, we used to have, like, the neighbors. We'd have, like, big games of tag, and all the base would be on somebody's porch, and all. And it was either you're going to get the fat kid or you're going to outrun the little brother or somebody who cries and all when they can't catch up.
Yep. Yeah, see, and it's not the problem of kids, because I, you know, I've worked with kids a million, you know, for a long time, and kids come up with their own games still. Mm-hmm. It's just part of being a kid imagination. They'll come up with games with anything, paper, pens, whatever it is. It's the parents that don't let kids through the yard, and they don't want kids roaming on the car, and they're not allowed to go out, and they can't. It's dark out. It's the parents. It's not the children get the blame, right? The next generation always gets the blame, but it's the people that raise them that really is the problem.
Well, it's the overprotectiveness. I mean, nobody wants you running through their lawn because their first thought is, oh, if he falls off my you know, climbing over my fence or something like that, I'm going to get sued, blah, blah, blah. And then with the kids and all, they're all panicking about, I don't want to go to the emergency room because of this and that. I mean, it's not saying back going, if he scrapes his knee, he'll cry. You give him a kiss of boo-boo and he'll run out and he'll play for another 3 hours and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's the difference in nowadays. It's all like, what happens if he gets hurt? What happens if he gets hurt? He'll survive.
Body heals. And I mean, the other childhood Manhunt was a big one for us, but the other ones were just like regular sports. We played a lot of basketball. We set up a lot of ramps for our bikes, like, and then a lot of street hockey at one point. Street hockey became like really dominant for a while. And then, Manhunt was a big thing. It really made me feel exactly like I was playing Manhunt again.
Yeah, we used to build ramps and all. I remember I found like an old desk in the middle of the woods, and I got it, and I got like a big thing of wood and all to make a ramp, and all my friends were like, you're nuts and all, and they were pretty much right because I flipped over and smacked myself on the top of my head, and I'm like, woo! I told you I could do it.
Mikey Knievel's last ride.
I think the one time I did a run and on, like, the wood buckled, so I just basically drove right into the damn desk.
We had, you know, so many things, like eventually, like, BMX became big, and, like, there were in the woods, like, people made these legit, like BMX parks, kind of, and I remember one in Woodbridge, and I remember one in Seawarren, and they were, like, far away. I wasn't even really supposed to be going to them because, like, I was supposed to stay within like certain main roads. That's where I was allowed to bike. And but you know, you just go wherever. And I remember going to them. Kids were crazy. Like, I was never like really great on a bike with tricks. Like rollerblades, I was much better than I was on a bike. But rollerblades became like not cool at some point. And then, but there was biking trails everywhere. My life was my bike, man. Back then, like, it was either riding around with your friends or setting up stupid ramps or riding to somewhere you weren't really allowed to go. Like, I remember we rode to this town called Seawarn because some of the friends found a big truck, the cargo part of the truck in the middle of the woods, full of nudie magazines. Full. Like, I'm not talking like there was a couple. It was floor to ceiling of nudie magazines. Now, when you're a kid,
think that truck driver was driving? He's like heading to Seattle. God damn it!
Now, when you're a kid, this is like, this is way better than church. Like, this is like, you know, like, you know, so everyone, like, everyone cleared that thing out. And I remember everyone being like, you got to get here. You got to get here and, like, check this thing out. And it was like just word of mouth. And it was so weird. So weird. Why was that in like a wooded area? Why? It was like a sea box full of nudie magazines.
It sounds like something like a deleted thing from like Breaking Bad or something like that, where it's like, how'd we get here? This don't make sense. Let's just cut it out. Let's just make meth.
Just like such a freer time where I feel like kids were allowed to like let go a little bit and like just like not have their parents watching every move, where they're just allowed to be kids and figure out their own personality for good or for bad, right? For good or for bad.
They were allowed to get in trouble, for lack of a bad term. It wasn't the end all to be all if you got in trouble. And it's funny how we talk about, oh, well, you know, we got rid of spanking and all that stuff, and now we do timeouts, but still, at the end of the day, you know, it wasn't, even if you got spanked, it wasn't a big deal. You know, you just went to your friends, my dad got me good. Everybody have a laugh, and we just go on a day. Now it's like, oh, don't do that, and the kid's traumatized. So.
Yeah, and just like I was saying, for bad or for good, meaning like you learn a lot of how to socialize with people when you're out on your own. When your parents are above you, you're not really learning how to interact with other kids, you know, like you're kind of like a pawn of theirs. Like, don't say this, don't say that. Oh, my God, Johnny said that. That's where you learn what curses are, and you learn what sex is, and you learn what other people's families are like and what other people are allowed to do and what the new trend is. Someone got a new CD, what the new video game is. You know what I mean? Like, that's how you learn, like, just hanging out with your pals out in the streets or out on the basketball court or whatever. So I feel like that's definitely something that's, you know, missing and probably never coming back, which is kind of sad.
No. It takes a month of planning just to get somebody to come over in a week.
Yeah, and I feel like that's sad to me, that freedom of like bike riding. And listen, if me and you become parents, you know, like, maybe we're gonna toot a different message, but I feel like I never want to forget that, like, to give my kids some freedom where they're allowed to go out, like, where I trust them. And like, you know, which is part of the reason like I want to move to the community I am, because it's a very nice little community, you know what I mean? Like, it's like by a lake community, there's a lot of kids, there's a lot of little like parks and little tiny things for them to do and the lake to go swimming. So I hope that's a good place to like raise a kid. So I hope that that becomes a reality. But I hope like I'm able to step back. Now I get it. Maybe it's a little different when it's your kid, but I hope I'm able to give them some freedom.
Well, it's not a question of you. Nowadays it's a question of what everybody else thinks. So that's the sad part. And, did you see that? Oh, we better tell the authorities and all. Oh, he let his kid go over there. He didn't have a helmet. He didn't have five layers of protection on it. That kid said a curse word at some point.
Yeah. I know. But, well, we can get more into that next week, Berlo. I think it's time to adios out of here. What do you think?
Sounds like a plan.
Berlu, anything to promote ski?
I will promote a friend's business, Clear CPR Training. If your company is looking to train employees in CPR and AED, Clear CPR Training will bring the equipment and train with you. Clear CPR offers basic life support and first aid training along with CPR and AED to companies in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. For more information, call them at 570-421-4CPR.
I'm CPR certified. I've been.
Look at you.
I've been for like 15, probably more than that, long times. I lifeguarded, and then I taught, and then I coached. Yeah. Like it was just.
And you were Lake Patrol.
Oh yeah, Lake Patrol was pretty amazing. Basically making less than minimum wage, but basically the biggest BS job I've ever had. So we can get back into Lake Patrol a little bit more next week.
Yeah,
I want to promote friends of the podcast. Friends of the podcast: Mike Ciccoli, fellow comic, very funny comic, and Kevin Israel, hilarious comic. They just came back with – they do a little like video show called Trailer Parking. It's about the trailers that come out for movies, and they review them and talk about movies. They just came out with one about this year's San Diego Comic-Con with like Aquaman and stuff like that. And so they do a good job. Funny – oh, ooh, sorry. Funny little video, and if you look up Trailer Parking – with Mike Ciccoli or Kevin Israel, you should be able to find it. And if not, you should go see either of them do stand up. You see?
Yep.
Did you see the Aquaman trailer?
I have yet to see it. I mean, looks I don't know what to think. Yeah, I mean, I know they kind of make a different. They've been changing up Aquaman the last couple of years.
Well, now Aquaman's really buff and like beautiful and like badass, not like this weird guy in a suit under the water.
Yeah, they've changed things around. Like, one of them is he's the king of Atlantis, and he lost his arm saving his child. He was, I think his brother was trying to murder him or something like that. That was in, like, one of the DC animated series and all. They're playing with things around and all, but...
I got him at the trailer. Looks pretty cool. And Jason Momoa, like, he's pretty cool. So, like, I don't know. It could be good. I feel like they it looks a lot like brighter and not as dark as they've been trying to go for, so maybe they're trying to like go back to like more of a fun superhero movie, which would be good for them.
Well, they're desperate because they know if they don't get some hits here with that and Wonder Woman, they could pretty much pack up their DC universe and all after the Justice League movie.
So it looks kind of cool. I might see it. I don't know. But well, we can talk more about that next week. It's time to get out of here, guys. Please keep subscribing, liking, loving, sharing, listening, caring, subscribing, downloading, and just reviewing, all that fun stuff. Follow us on all social media at Verbal Shenanigans and at VS Comedy on Twitter. We'll be back next week. We usually come up on every Friday. So, and if not, please go download our back catalog. There are a million different fun episodes and really good guests. So, Mike, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Get something good in the yard sale for me this week, would you?
All right. I got this chicken I think you'll enjoy very much. So, got good reviews from Cali.
All right. You got a chicken at the yard sale?
Yeah. Yard sale. Yeah. In the yard. Still counts.
Thank you, Mike Bell. Thank you, Mike Berlew. Adios.
G.I. Joe against Cobra and Destro, fighting to save the day. He never gives up. He's always there, fighting for freedom over land and air. G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe is there. G.I. Joe is the code name for America's daring, highly trained special mission force. Its purpose, to defend human freedom against Cobra, a ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world.
He never gives up. He'll stay till the fight's won. G.I. Joe will dare. G.I. Joe.